This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Giddy hit Austin. Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. I lost my mind again, out where the river swells with rain. She kindly took me in, made me feel I was not the one to blame. As shades was blowing in the trees, the unknown shaking at my knees. Her voice places me at ease and I'm home again.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, broadcasting to you, the fan, the one in the know, on the cutting edge, brave enough, wise enough to be listening to this broadcast. Pat yourself on the back a little bit there, folks. Coming to you in high-definition audio or something quite like it, all over this state of ours, this country, this world of ours, to anyone willing to listen, it's free. Just go to p2podcast.com, click on any of the old archived episodes, and expand your mind, free yourself. Listen to the P2 Podcast. How you doing out there, folks? Phil Pritchett here with you, as always. Oh, it's that time of the week where we sit down here as friends, as brothers and sisters in music, talk about our lives and times. I've been out there at the front, out there making music, making a living, grinding away. Been out there at the front where all the fighting is. Now I'm back with the news. How you doing out there, folks? Thrilled to be with you. Thrilled to be with you here for this edition of the P2 Podcast. Oh, man, have you enjoyed that Blake Walker being here? Well, if you haven't gotten enough of Blake Walker, we're going to go back. Well, this is rare. We're going back one more time with him this week in our middle segment that I'm looking very forward to. Man, still talking about local sports. I've got a lot of email on this. People angry about the state of the Dallas Cowboys. What a disaster. What a disaster. Got a new coach. Got rid of Wade. Big old nice Wade. We'll miss you, Wade. Maybe he just didn't have the nastiness to be an NFL head coach. You know, he's a nice guy. You know, he kind of reminds me of that teacher you had that everybody'd be talking in class. And he never really got on anybody. He just kind of, come on, man. You guys be quiet back there. You know, that kind of thing. You know, he's not going to just sit there and just bring the hammer down on guys. So Walker will be joining us here. Walker, Texas road manager, Blake. My old road manager. He'll be here in our second segment to talk some more Cowboys, etc. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. And also, man, we're going to try something different in the vault this week. Brace yourselves. Brace yourselves. Hey, I'm like everybody else out there, all of you. You know, as much as I love albums and vinyl and side A, side B, man, it's a whole album project. Let me tell you what, man. I get my little iTunes gift cards from people, too. You know, holidays or something. You know, do I always go to iTunes? In fact, if I ever get an iTunes card, I always use that as an opportunity to download some newer stuff or you know, tracks that maybe a one-off, a single from some band. Like, man, I always love this song. But, you know, I'm not going to go. In fact, I don't think I've ever paid to download an entire album. Is that terrible? Now, of course, I've, you know, consolidated my own CD collection. I buy vinyl records at the stores, LPs. And convert them to digital, as you enjoy every week in the vault. But a lot of times, man, I'll just say, man, I like this song by this band or, you know, this group without just buying all their stuff. I just kind of like to cherry pick around. So we're going to have kind of a grab bag, the first grab bag edition of the vault. Not looking at an entire album, just looking at some tracks I've accumulated here over the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, that always show up prominently in any Phil Pritchett playlist, that come in handy when I'm out there driving around, driving home from a gig late at night, or maybe going to a gig, getting pumped up or whatever. We got some tracks we're always playing on the iPod from kind of some bands, kind of a grab bag, unusual bands. I don't know. Some of them I don't even know a whole lot about, you know. But so we'll take a look at the grab bag version of the vault here today after being joined by Blake Walker. Well, here at the top of the show, numbers. What do you mean, Phil? Numbers? What are you talking about? So many great numbers are coming out there. I'm talking about statistics. Statistics in radio. Statistics in politics. All kinds of concert attendance. All kinds of stuff like that. I'm always trying to glean a little information online. You're looking for anything that has like a, you know, poll percentages, numbers. I don't know. I'm always trying to, you know, I'm an independent businessman, essentially. I'm always looking for a little edge. My dad always gives me his old copies of Barron's and the Wall Street Journal, so I don't have to pay for a subscription. Thanks, Dad. So I'm always pouring through there. And, you know, there's all sorts of cool articles in there that, you know, catch my attention. Business, music, a lot of good technology and music news in those fine publications. One of them was talking about attendance at concerts and really how very little people go to concerts anymore. Think how many concerts come through your town every year. You know, sure, you know, something like Lady Gaga gets a lot of attention playing the American Airlines Center, Kings of Leon or something, or Elton John. But man, for every one of those, there's 100. Chris Cornell, you know, the old singer for Soundgarden. I mean, you're kind of like, man, does he have a new album out? He's touring? That's kind of weird. And the surprising number was of people, I can't remember what the age was, you know, 20 to 40 or something like that. The average person goes to like 1.2 concerts a year, like one concert a year. Man, when I was in high school, we used to go to, I'd go to like 20 a year. This was, you know, 80s, late 80s, but it just wasn't that expensive, is the bottom line. Remember those days? Remember the 80s, I always say? You know, we'd go to, Starplex or whatever it's called now, the, the big shit in Dallas. Used to be the Starplex there at the fairgrounds. What was it? Is it still Smirnoff or Superpages.com Center or something like that? I don't know. We just went to the Starplex. Dude, in one summer, it would just be Clapton, then Dylan, then Elton John, then David Bowie, then Guns N' Roses, Sting. You know, I just would go, you know, it was like $15 to get in there and sit on the lawn, on the grass back there. Maybe to sit in a seat, you know, you might have to pay $20 or something like that, $25. And then halfway through the show, you could just kind of run up to the front of the stage, usually depending on how big the show was. But man, I thought that was a pretty shocking statistic. The point was made by our old friend Bob Lefsetz, the Lefsetz letter, who you should be reading, that I do too. He made a he put it in good words. He just said, you know, going to a concert used to be like going to a movie. Cost about the same, maybe a little more expensive to go to a concert, sure. You expected that, but you'd go on a whim. Hey, look, Sting's in town tonight. Or, hey, tomorrow night, Elton John's playing out at the Shed. I don't know. And it was even more so that way, Lefsetz was saying, I'm sure, you know, in the 70s or 60s. You know, they hear about those old concerts at the Fillmore and all that. You know, people would just go. It'd be free or $5 or $10. You'd just go and you'd go there all the time and just see whoever was playing. Just, hey, he's playing here. He can't be that bad. Whereas now, going to a concert, he said, it's akin to like going on vacation. It's something you just have to plan like a year in advance and buy a voucher and a right to purchase pass and get in the fan club and you put half the money down and then you've got to redeem your ticket online. There's this huge process, man, to just like, ooh, you know, whoever it's going to be, Billy Joel or Celine Dion. I'm talking these huge tickets, the Eagles. And, man, there's just this huge thing that hoops to jump through, and it's so expensive. So, man, you're going to do that like once a year. I mean, you don't just go to Tahiti. Hey, let's go to Tahiti tomorrow, you know. Mel's point was just you don't just fire off to Aspen or something for a 7-day ski trip on a whim. That's something you got to plan for a year or 2 years in advance. And, man, the prices on these concerts have gotten to be such. When the money gets that big, that's just what people have to do. You got to plan for that kind of stuff. And, man, I think that just kind of kills the whole spirit of the deal. You know, to have that be that expensive. And as a result, you just have fewer people going to fewer concerts. And you have these acts like Bon Jovi and people like that, just touring relentlessly. They just never come off the road, man. Do they have a new album out? I don't know. They're playing, you know, the Airline Center, and they keep coming back, and they keep coming back, and they keep coming back, and just playing more and more for an ever-dwindling piece of the pie is kind of the result. Oh, man, where does it all end, folks? The question we had on the podcast one time was, you know, when these dinosaur acts finally just can't play, like the Stones or Elton and guys like that, McCartney, you know, are there new bands? I know Kings of Leon sells out the, you know, an arena, you know, now. But, you know, in 10 years, who are the bands that, you know, 10 years from now, you know, is Jack White, the White Stripes, are they going to be just selling 40,000 tickets in Dallas in 10 years on their reunion tour? You're kind of like, man, I don't know. Is Wilco, you know, a popular band, but are they going to grow? Are they just going to be packing the Cotton Bowl, you know, in 2016? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if, you know, me and Kurt South had a podcast a while back talking about how big can you get now? It's, there's so many bands. People have so many options, you know, that you look at maybe a band that plays the Granada Theater. I'm just using Dallas and local, or Billy Bob's, and hey, man, they get a few thousand people out there. Man, I don't know, for a new band, I mean, that's pretty damn good. You're like, man, how much bigger can they get than that? Especially in the rock and pop world. You know, country, I don't know. Country music, maybe you can get out there a little bit if you get the right things happening. But I don't know, man, it seems to be a real ceiling out there that, you know, the whole name of the game is just to sustain it. Who knows? Well, another interesting key piece of news. Man, did you see this on television? I don't watch a lot of late-night television anymore. I got kids, you see. Trying to get my sleep, man. I'm always, if I'm awake, I'm playing for you guys at the firehouse or the surf club or somewhere. You know, Effingham, Illinois, how you doing? But, man, Jon Stewart over on cable, man, Comedy Central, pulling in huge ratings, man. And some of his shows recently have topped Leno and Letterman. God, Leno's ratings have just been abysmal, haven't they, since he came back? I've been watching Conan's new show. Pretty cool. I've always become a Conan fan, but not huge. I was into him when he first kind of came out. My guy I grew up with was David Letterman, you know, on the old NBC show, back when he was smoking the cigar, the wrestling shoes, throwing watermelons and stuff off of buildings just to see what would happen with a megaphone and talking to people down on the street and all that fun stuff. He really doesn't do that much anymore. I mean, his show's kind of more like Leno's, just a monologue and guests. Still pretty amusing. But pretty interesting, man. There's so many more avenues out there on cable and, you know, people, the ratings just starting to spread out that we talk about how there's just not all those sets of eyeballs like, you know, when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan, they had, you know, God, I don't know how many millions of people watching them. It's just ridiculous. You're like, well, there were three TV stations, you know, back then, and the Beatles were on one of them at primetime. So everybody watched, just all anybody had. I mean, so now you have so many options out there. It's hard to get that kind of attention, you know, get that kind of get those eyeballs, you know, and just have that central community event that just unites us all together. So some pretty interesting stuff there on the ratings. You know, Seth Godin had a nice point the other day talking about the election. You know, everybody talking about all these candidates that people don't know a lot about, Tea Party candidates and stuff, getting elected. And he's kind of like, everyone's all astounded. Well, you know, this guy's no good. How did he get elected? And how did he get? And he kind of made the point. He kind of compared it to the music business. He said, well, you know, technology and people's access to information has changed dramatically over the last, especially the last few years. We all agree on that, yes? How can you not, of course? So you're seeing, as a result, Jon Stewart on cable TV, you know, candidates maybe with a good online presence being able to have an impact through new and alternate avenues to reach voters and to, you know, resonate with voters or fans or whatever the case may be. And, you know, just how that's changing and how that, just as business as usual music business isn't working right now. Hell, man, we got Def Leppard's new album. We're just going to put a big billboard up there and, you know, buy a bunch of CDs and run it up the Billboard chart and hope it goes platinum, and it just levels off at whatever it levels off at. Well, those old methods just don't work, do they? I mean, like we always talk about on the show. You know, you're just not able to ram stuff down people's throats in the old school way. People have ways around that, around ads and BS and information. So it's not surprising, Godin was pointing out in one of his recent posts, that you're seeing that also in politics. You're going to start having more and more candidates who maybe can are very web savvy, or at least someone in their staff is, and are able to produce things online, whether it's their speeches or their debates or interaction with voters. That will resonate with people, you know, just stuff on Facebook and stuff. I mean, but do it in a creative and engaging fashion that gets people excited about the candidate, gets them excited about voting. And Godin says it was no surprise to him that you're, you know, seeing these new kinds of avenues, you know, producing results in politics. We've been talking about it in music, of course, for a long time now, that all the old guys can't sell records like they used to, and all these indie bands are usurping the whole deal. Well, why wouldn't that happen in politics? I mean, the same tools are now available to anyone to, you know, blog or come out with, you know, ideas or information or publish their thoughts on something. But what do you hear from? Just as you heard from the major labels, you know, bitching and moaning about, oh man, you know, MySpace, all these crappy bands, and they're stealing all our music and ideas and whatever. You're hearing the same thing kind of from the, the Beltway establishment, you know, the heads of the, you know, Republican Party, you know, kind of maybe rolling their eyes or thumbing their nose at the Tea Party stuff, you know, just, oh, these guys aren't really, they're costing us the Senate, and they're not a real candidate, or, you know, kind of, you know, you start hitting some minefields there, because there are people out there using technology and new avenues in different ways. So you haven't seen the last of that, man. I keep saying that the first... the next big news story in music is going to be one of you kids out there, one of you people out there writing music. You're going to make a great album. You're going to put it on your website for sale for a dollar or $2 or $3 or something like that. And you're going to sell 100 million of them the first week. Somehow, you know, something's going to work. And you'll have $100 million in your checking account the next morning. And that'll be the wake-up call to everybody. Just go, wait a minute, how the hell did this guy do that? Well, I think the same might be true in politics and a lot of other fields. You know, you just say, man, how did this guy go out and get, you know, 80% of the vote? Just like, what? Just like, well, he had this a web show. He was talking a lot, and people started, you know, really resonate. You know, what he said really resonated with people. And there you go. So brace yourselves, folks. The future is at hand. Well, what do I hear? I think I hear someone rummaging around in the kitchen out there. You know, and he's rummaging around. That could only mean that Blake Walker, Texas Road Manager, is here, coming back for more to talk more Cowboys, sports, and just general fun knowledge. We'll get him in here in the next segment. Blake Walker. Girl of all season. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios. My studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Call me, 817-733-5256, or email me, phil at philpritchett.com. Send me your thoughts, your ideas for the podcast. I love reading them all. I will respond to them immediately. Well, 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 I have heard him out there rustling and rapping at my chamber door. He is Blake Walker. Walker, Texas Road Manager, is here. Gosh, he's joining us for the third week in a row. He's just turning a regular here on the podcast.
Love it.
Just going on and on. Every time his segment ends, he just goes, I'm coming back next week. We're going to finish this up. We're going to finish this up, he says. Going on and on about some sports happening here in the world. Oh, man. Did I ever tell you the time that, talk about this World Series talk, in a music-related story, I had a gig, when was this, a few years back, when the Houston Astros, were playing, I guess it was the Cardinals, in the NLCS, and I'll just tell y'all exactly how this went down. Picture this. It was Game 7, ALCS, and if the Astros won and went to the World Series, which they did not, but I got a call from somebody in the Houston Astros that said, look, if we're in the World Series, we're booking your band to come play at some big tent thing for the Astros. Well, let's just say it was $5,000. A big show. We'll pay you $5,000, Phil, to bring the band down to play. If the Astros beat the Cardinals in Game 7, then you'll get $5,000 playing for the Houston Astros. Well, a couple of my conniving, gambling bookie-minded friends, booking agents, people in my association said, "Man, I go, but man, if they don't get in the World Series, I got nothing." They just go, "That's easy. Call my bookie and place a bet, a $2,500 bet, on the Cardinals to win the World Series, to win Game 7. That way, if the Cardinals win, you win $2,500 and you don't have the gig. And if the Astros win, you get your $5,000. Then you got to pay your You got to pay the bet off at $2,500. But either way, you get $2,500. It's still a good night. It was a sure $2,500.
So
what did I do? What did I do? You know me.
I know you. You didn't bet.
I wrung my hands. Couldn't didn't sink that low. And then they lost. And I got nothing. Everyone goes, "It's a sure bet. Someone's handing you $2,500, and you won't even take it." I'm like, I can't call a bookie and place a bet. It's gross. No. Oh, come on, man. I'll take it to you for it. I couldn't do it. I go, man, I'll take my chances. Hey, I win $5,000 if the Astros win. Of course, the Astros didn't win, so I got nothing. I just go, man, maybe that's why I'll never be huge, you know. I'm not willing to deal with the bookies and offsetting and leveraging my career all the way to the top.
Yeah.
It's a shame. It's a shame. So here I sit. Here I sit, you know, opining and telling sad stories. What else is going on? We're talking about Jerry World, the big Cowboy Stadium out here. They can't seem to win out there.
Turd on the turnpike.
Man, no one has a lot of good things to say about the stadium, but I don't know if that's just in vogue. It's not really that great. Everyone marvels at the TV and the spectacle of the whole thing. But yeah, the game viewing experience, I don't know. It's kind of dwarfed by the size of the whole thing.
Because of the Jumbotron, the cheap seats, you can still see the game because you can see the Jumbotron. So there's a lot of pluses to it.
Yeah.
The bars and the restaurants and the gift shop. There's some really cool stuff. The bottom line to that whole deal is always going to be the same for me. If it's Dallas's team, then they should have built it in Dallas.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It drives me crazy. Even though I live in North Dallas, it drives me crazy that I have to drive to Arlington for the Rangers and Arlington for the Cowboys. And no offense, Arlington, but it's just a butthole. There's nothing fun over there.
Oh, none taken.
Yeah.
None taken.
Don't worry about it.
Who could possibly be offended by that? Thank you, Walker.
Arlington sucks.
You're going to get us thrown off the air. Listen
it
to
sucks.
This. Come on.
Dude, okay, you know
you like On the Border? Come on.
There's three or four strip malls and then a bunch of just run-down, crappy shopping centers. It's in the hood in Arlington. Right. It's like you go to Wrigley and you go to...
Well, they're downtown parks.
They're downtown. It's like... Imagine, if you will, if Laura Miller had her crap together when she was down there in downtown Dallas, if we would have put the Cowboys...
Old mayor of Dallas, Laura Miller, who did not want to build the Cowboys stadium in Dallas.
Those guys couldn't agree on the color of the sky. I mean, all they did was fight and piss and moan. If you could imagine, you know, Uptown's... Of course, it's Chris and it's the $30,000 millionaires, but there's some appealing things to
Uptown. Okay, right.
And there's some nice things down there. Imagine, if you will, if next to the AAC you had the Cowboys Stadium and the Rangers Ballpark. Imagine what that would have done for downtown. You would have eventually pushed even more of the hood back down into the south and built, even tripled the size of Uptown, and could have finally put together, you know, some sort of mass transit better than DART, and a lot of money in restaurants and hotels sunk into it.
Yep.
And you have a Chicago, you have a Boston-type sports atmosphere.
Or how about looking at that AT&T Park San Francisco on TV? right there in downtown San Francisco, yes, overlooking the bay. You're kind of like, man, that looks great. Looks like you feel like you want to go to a ball game there.
The biggest thing I heard, I think it was Bob and Dan on the ticket, were saying, hey, you go visit San Francisco and see a game, you walk away going, I got to come back and stay a couple days because I didn't get to see it all.
Yeah, right,
then
right.
Then he said, you think you come to Arlington? And you go, you know what? I really got to come back here. That JCPenney over there in that shopping center next to the
right now. Check out that fountain over there.
Yeah. No one goes to Arlington and goes, man, I really got to come back for a few days. It's all by itself in the middle of nowhere in a bad, not a great neighborhood.
Well, you know, that's always been sort of a sticking point a bit.
It's just not.
Well, I think that's hard. Right now, the Rangers are in the freaking World Series, so the games are sold out.
Yep.
And the Cowboys were good in the new stadium, so the games are sold out. But as soon as those teams start to really struggle, and the Rangers have struggled for years, and attendance has struggled for years.
Yeah.
And, man, let me tell you what. People don't think the Cowboys' attendance can struggle, but if those ticket prices and being out there in Arlington, it can struggle mightily, dude.
Yeah.
It can. It can go south in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
And, you really can at those prices, and you're just like, I mean, no matter how bad the Cubs are, people still go to the games because it's right there in the middle of town.
It's a party, man. It's something.
Yeah, the Red Sox, you're like, oh, they suck this year, but it's still fun to go to the ball game. Get your dog. Yeah. It's an afternoon game after work. You go out there. You hit the subway, pop up. You're right there at Fenway. You know, it does lack that being out there. The buildings themselves, of course, are great once you're inside, and they're beautiful, and they're, like you were saying, but the stadium's got a lot of cool stuff going for it. But it's kind of like a music venue. Bigger isn't necessarily better.
Right.
And so the Cowboy thing is so big, but, you know, you kind of like going to those Lambeau Field where it is smaller. You go, man, you can really see the game. You're right on top of the action. You know, you hear people talk about, like, Notre Dame, Kyle Field's like that, you know. Yeah. I mean, there's just more of an intimate feel. That's what you want from any sort of public viewing event, isn't it? You don't want to be way back off the field looking at a TV. I don't know. It's a weird concept.
It's a cool stadium. I'm not going to lie, but at the same time,
it's only cool because it's state of the art.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is 5-10 years from now, it won't be state of the art either. No. It'll look – so what are they going to do? They're just going to tear that down and build another one?
Yeah, there's nothing too unique about it except for that screen, that TV screen, and the next big stadium will get the same thing or a bigger one.
Right.
You know, and so there won't be that much difference.
There won't be that. It's kind of like an old house, you know, in a neat old neighborhood that was built in 1933. You can tear it down and build the McMansion.
Right.
Or you can restore that old house. Maybe you add on to it, but we kept the entrance and the floor, it keeps it.
Yeah.
But once you tear it down, it's gone forever, and the McMansion is going to be dated in 10 years. Then you got to tear it down every 10 years.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just restore the old one, you got you a treasure forever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It all goes back to I wish it was in downtown. I wish they would have revitalized maybe the Cotton Bowl area, really taken care of it, built some nice businesses down there, run some of the riffraff off. I mean, you could have done a lot of things and helped downtown.
Yeah.
And instead, we just become this stress. I mean, all these people are coming for the Super Bowl this year. None of them are staying in Arlington. They're all going to be in Dallas or Fort Worth.
Yeah, then in Dallas, they got to get on a bus and be like, where are we going?
Yeah, they go to Arlington to the stadium. It's just, it's sad, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was all about money.
It was all about money. Well, man, speaking about other things going on out there. Oh, man. Well, the Cowboys season just going south. I had a theory. Tell me if you agree with this. And maybe this relates to a lot of teams in the league, but certainly with Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. A couple years ago, we got a old veteran, Keith Brooking, from the Atlanta Falcons, you know, middle linebacker.
And before that, we had an old veteran, middle linebacker, Zach Thomas.
But I remember being struck again, had Zach Thomas.
Yeah.
And what did they both
Good
say?
Texas Tech
what did
man.
They both say about those guys upon arrival? That I thought was interesting. They're the heart and soul of this team. I'm like, heart and soul of this team? He just got here.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got guys we're paying millions of dollars that have been here for several years.
Yeah.
Why aren't those guys the heart and soul of the team? No one says Terrence Newman's the heart and soul of the team. Or guys that have been here for a long time. And it got me to thinking, dude, you know what? Jerry and the Cowboys, they're like any poor manager. They're always into the new. Whoever's the newest guy is your most enthusiastic and best player. And then a few years after it, they lose their enthusiasm. They get beaten down by Jerry and the whole deal, and it all goes down the crapper.
Yeah.
And that's the pattern the Cowboys have had since Jerry has been here.
Yeah.
You had Jimmy Johnson come in. He got lucky with Jimmy. He let Jimmy do the drafts in the Herschel Walker trade. But after 4 years or so, Jimmy was done.
Yeah.
So he leaves. Then you bring in, who's the next guy? Barry Switzer.
After who has Jimmy's guys.
After a couple years, but Jerry's burned out. You know, Barry Switzer's burned out. He leaves. Chan Gailey, a couple years. He leaves. Campo, a couple years. He leaves. Then you got Parcells. He let Parcells draft DeMarcus Ware and a couple other guys.
He finally gets going, and then we got run him off.
But, man, Parcells, after 3 years, done with the deal. Gone. And now here we are with Wade. We're kind of at the end of the Wade Phillips 4 years or so.
Joke.
And he's going to be gone too. And everybody thinks, well, man, we need some guy to come in here and just lead us for 10 years like Belichick. So I'm like, dude, it ain't going to happen here.
No.
Whoever
Jerry.
Comes here is going to be 3 years. They're going to be like so beaten down by this thing. And they're just going to be gone. And these players we get, you know, when Marion Barber was a rookie and you're watching him out there, or Felix Jones, their first year, man, they're out there running and just waving the towel. You're like, man, this guy, just, you know, 2-3 years from now, he's going to be the best back in the league. But what happens? Same thing as the coaches. Beaten down after 3 or 4 years, just depressed, not getting enough carries. And you wonder what happened. Right now, everybody's saying what about Dez Bryant? He looks 1,000 times better, more physical, and faster than anybody on the field.
Yeah.
And he does. He's incredible. I'm like, everyone goes, man, in a couple years, he's going to be the best receiver in all of football. I'm like, in a couple years, he's going to have his head down, sitting on the end of the bench with his arms folded, and he's not going to be engaged in the deal.
Yeah.
He's going to be done, just like all these other guys. He's going to be just totally ass-whipped by the whole deal. It's over. What do you have to say to that?
I think having a guy on your team who just got there and calling them the heart and soul of the team is an oxymoron. You cannot purchase heart.
Right.
He doesn't just show up, and because he's yelling at everyone, we call that heart.
But when they come in, Jerry puts his arm around him. This is our new guy. He's here to lead this program. He's all pumped about it. But then Jerry, every year at the draft or free agency, he moves on to the next guy after paying this guy all of his money, and they get complacent.
The last heart and soul of our team that was on that roster that left was Darren Woodson.
Yeah,
Darren
Woodson
was respected. In that locker room, he was
an old school guy. Yeah, a leader.
He was a football guy. He knew where to be on every play.
He was awesome for 8 years or however long we had him. I mean,
Darren was a guy people respected. He was older. He was a Pro Bowler. He knew where to be. He always saved guys. You know that free safety, strong safety.
Yeah, that's right.
Position. He knew how to do it, and people respected that. And he was the last leader on the team. And when Darren left, that defense crumbled.
Yeah, that's right.
Never ever was the same.
That's right.
And no coach has been able to put it together. It's been a string of bad coaching, and not even that. It's been a string of terrible drafts.
Oh,
I
no
mean,
question.
Awful drafts. And I blame Jerry for almost all of that. I know Parcells came in and got some talent.
Well, he was DeMarcus Ware and some of those guys.
Let's
good
not
players,
forget, but we took Julius Jones over Steven Jackson.
That's right.
And Parcells was here for that. So there's
and Bobby Carpenter, we took him over a bunch of guys.
Oh Lord! And then we moved down the road, and here we are. You think Felix Jones isn't a freaking homer call? Jerry went to Arkansas.
Yeah.
He takes Felix Jones.
But he looked great that first
year. But he doesn't look great now.
No, he doesn't.
What he looks like now is a guy who got to play behind McFadden and didn't touch the ball a lot, but when he did play, looked great.
Yeah.
What happens when you give him the ball the whole game? He gets injured. What happens when he tries to run up the middle? Nothing.
Yeah.
The guy has some finesse. He can run outside the corner, you know, but that's it. And now that when you're trying to give him the ball every down, he looks awful.
I
think that's a bust. I think we got so many bad calls on draft day. It's coming back to haunt us. We got no coaching, no motivation. There's nobody in the room that's a leader.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to call Jason Witten a leader, he's a leader on the field, but it doesn't seem like anybody's listening to him in the locker room. DeMarcus Ware may be a Pro Bowler and, you know, a great defensive player, but it doesn't look like anybody's listening to him in the locker room.
Yeah.
And that's where the head coach has to step in and be respected and be listened to.
Kevin Haggard, the patron saint of the full band, and our good friend down there in Houston, who loves to rub my nose in the Cowboys' dirt.
Everyone does.
Shoots me a pretty funny email with some cowboy jokes on there. Among them, what do you call a Dallas Cowboy with a Super Bowl ring? Old.
Yeah.
But one of the best ones was how is a possum like the Dallas Cowboys? They play dead at home and they get killed on the road.
Oh!
Put it down.
Haggard.
Put it down.
Classic.
That's pretty. I don't know what website he pulled that off of.
That's funny.
I'll be impressed if that was his own wit. Pretty good stuff.
I think.
Pretty good stuff. You know, I feel a bit bad. I'm apologizing to you fans out there. If you're tuning in to enlighten your musical life, my apologies. Me and Walker here, you know, a couple Dallas guys growing up, had to get some stuff off our chest here.
Oh, yeah.
But we hope you either love or hate the Cowboys, and somehow you're engaged in this this conversation we've been having, talking some local sports here for the last couple of segments.
Blame the franchise. Don't blame the boys. Stop telling me they don't have any passion. I mean, that's fine, but blame the franchise. Blame the ownership. Blame the coaching.
Well, it's kind of the, you know, someone pointed out a while back that, you know, Jerry Jones, he struck it rich in oil, or his dad did or something. I don't know how. He made all his money just kind of gambling and
oil and gas, yeah.
Yeah, but they said, man, now, they said he did not make his money. Don't ever forget about Jerry Jones. He didn't make his money deftly managing a business, delegating authority, hiring the right people, having sectors of his company produce better. That's not his. That's not what he's good at.
Right.
He's just jet setting around, writing checks, hoping it all falls into place.
I mean, he did.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, and he's done some great things for the Cowboys.
He's done great selling merchandise and putting us on TV all over the world. But nothing when it comes to after those three Super Bowls.
My big thing with Jerry is always the commercials. Why is he always in the commercials?
Yeah.
I asked this to somebody the other day, and they go, "What do you mean? He's the owner of the Cowboys." I'm like, "I know, but you think Papa John's wants Jerry in the commercial? That Jerry has to be putting himself in the commercial."
Yeah.
They're like, "Why? What do you mean?" I'm like, "If you're Papa John's, would you say they're going to say, hey, can Romo come do this? Or one of the players, like a young, good-looking Jerry? Well, I thought I'd be in the commercial. We could write something in there." And so here's Jerry. I'm just like, he just wants to be on TV.
Yeah.
That's the only, they go. I go, he doesn't need the money. It doesn't help the team win. So why is he in the commercial? The only explanation is he wants to do it.
Yeah.
He wants to be on TV.
Hey, you know what?
You know,
just let him head coach.
That's funny.
Just get it over with.
That's
what
I'm saying.
Let him go be the head coach. Let's see what he's got. If he's going to sit there and pull the strings, put the freaking headset on, go sit on the sidelines and get killed, and let's get it over with.
I think it's true. I think it's true. And, you know, there's a lot of comparisons being made between him and Al Davis, the owner and GM of the Raiders, and the mess he makes out there.
Ugh.
And, man, I used to take offense to that, but now there's a lot of truth to it. I'm just like, man, you know, some guys, yeah.
You know, and if you can imagine Tom Hicks making himself the GM of the Rangers.
The old Rangers
owner. Like, that's what Jerry did.
Yeah, right,
that's like, what business does he have being a GM?
Yeah, was Hicks going to fly around to all the games and be talking to the farm system guys?
You judge talent? No, no.
And the thing is, Jerry's not doing that with the Cowboys. He's making deals for the Super Bowl and stuff. He's not out there checking out the free agent market. I know he thinks he's got guys doing it, but he's not doing it as the GM.
I went to Alaska for 8 days one time to go fishing.
Yeah.
And I get up there, and I meet this guy who's this huge Cowboys fan. And he's like, "Yeah, man, you know, they show the Cowboys games up here." And I thought, hey, that's awesome, and it's great. Jerry made some money on a TV deal in freaking Alaska, but we're getting killed at home, and we're constantly going through bad draft picks, and we suck. So what good does it do that we're shown in Alaska that five Eskimos have Cowboys gear on in the snow? Does that help us win on Sunday? No. It makes no sense.
It gets a little more it's just out there spreading the Cowboy gospel.
Yeah, who cares, man?
Oh, man. Thank you, fans. Our apologies, should I say. I don't know. Talking local sports. Got to get some of this stuff off our chest. Take a little break from the music malaise, all the stuff in the music business that we love talking about. But it's nice to have a little break here. Thank you to Blake Walker, Walker Texas Road Manager, for talking some sports, Cowboys,
sports.
Some Jerry. Oh, refreshing. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Blake. These last few weeks have been very enjoyable for me. Cathartic, in fact. Well, coming up here in the vault, I will do my customary blindfolded walk to the stack of vinyl records over here, pull something out. We'll talk about it in the vault next.
Long time, and the pendulum swings. fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Thanks for listening this week, folks. Thrilled to be with you as always. Thrilled and delighted. Man, how about that cool track right here? Daniel Lanois. You know of whom I speak, the great producer. Oh, man, he produced So by Peter Gabriel, Teatro by Willie Nelson, an album called The Joshua Tree by U2. Oh, man, what else he done? He did a new Neil Young record, Les Noirs. If you check that out, it's Neil in a castle with an electric guitar and Lanois producing. Good stuff, man. But this is, he plays pedal steel, you know, guitar, a producer, but he's always done his own songs. I dig this track. You know, I don't know if I could do the whole album, Shine, but that song right here, man, As Tears Roll By, pretty cool, man, kind of different. So I was going through my iTunes looking for some grab bag of stuff. And, of course, I got all the albums everywhere. I'm thinking, well, what are just some tracks that float around that get played a lot on the iPod rig, man? In the band van rolling from place to place. What do I just have to hit occasionally? Walking around the house, you know, making guacamole. What do I put on the stereo and just say, let's hear it, man. Come on. Well, there's one right there, man. I love that Lanois song. As Tears Roll By from the album Shine. Check it out. Oh, man, you know my good friend Wes Cunningham was here. Been on the podcast several times, the podcast's own Wes Cunningham. He's made the new movie, Saronia, out there looking for distribution. Still in editing, as far as I know. Man, he made a record. We alluded on the show to his Warner Brothers years and the records he made for them. But, man, this was a song on there. It's called A Letter to McKay, or God's Way, that he did. God, this was, you know, 7-8 years ago. But, man, what a great song. This is one of those songs that when he sent me the roughs and said, hey, here's the record we're working on. This one really stood out. This is from his album, 12 Ways to Win People to Your Way of Thinking. You can get it on iTunes. It's out there. 12 Ways. This is Letters to McKay from my old friend Wes Cunningham. Check it out. Cunningham.
I hope this letter finds you in good spirits and you're feeling alive. Me, I've had some better days, but I'm still trying to get back. Tune. truth. And just now, I'm not doing so well. I'm not doing, but it's just God's way. God's way of breaking me down, of tearing me out, out of the world. It's just God's way.
Ah, greatness. Greatness. How you doing, Cunningham? Sounds good, man. Love that track, man. Love it. God, the way. You know I love Costello, right? No secret there. You know what, man? Some of his newer stuff intrigues me greatly. A bit uneven, I'd say. A bit uneven. But you know what? I had someone in the studio who's kind of having trouble letting it go as a vocalist, should we say. Holding back. And so I was looking through my iTunes, like, man, what's a track where the vocalist, maybe he's always on pitch, maybe he's not always on pitch, or his voice cracks a little bit, but let me find an impassioned vocal performance in a great song. And man, I came up with this song. This is from the Delivery Man album, Elvis Costello and the Imposters. Either side of the same town, you want to hear a vocal performance and just a great song with great changes. Check this out, man, from Costello in his later years. This was just a few years ago. Either side of the same town. Elvis!
Nothing will ever be the same. All of the promises we made, they seem hollow. But there is still streets in this town, marked with your shadow. So if you see me look surprised, if you don't, just pass me by. And I might even touch your sleeve. As you turn to leave, now it's hard to act like strangers when we used to be so strong. Everything is changing, and most of it is wrong. What do we know of anything to fool? Oh,
That's how you sing music there. No restraint. Great stuff, isn't it, man? From the Delivery Man. That was Elvis Costello and the Imposters. Either side of the same town.
Nothing could ever be the same.
Love it, dude. I'm going to start a Costello tribute band and play for 8 people every night all across this great country of ours. Who's with me? I'm going to get me the old Jazzmaster guitar, put on my horn-rimmed glasses, walk pigeon-toed, and just roll it out and rock it. Maybe Stu and Blue will come with me. That's where all the money is now, man, tribute bands. I don't know if there's enough market out there for an Elvis Costello tribute band. I don't know. But I'd love doing it. I'll put that on the back burner with about 12 other things I'm working on. Oh, we all know Wilco, you know, the last really cool band in the world that sells a lot of records. Or that does very well, you know, draws big crowds. Our old man Jeff Tweedy. Of course, he was in the big, great band Uncle Tupelo starting out. I think he was a bass player. He's the bass player in that band. But this was one of his songs from way back in the day that I really like. Jeff Tweedy on vocal here. Black Eye. Check it out on the podcast, Tweedy.
He had a black eye. He was proud of, like some of his friends. Made him feel somewhere outside of everything and everywhere he'd been. Like his brothers, he emptied himself and played it safe. Like their father, he wanted to remember, but he almost always forgot what he was gonna say. Black eye. When he realized that this one was here to stay, he took down all the mirrors in the hallway and thought only of his younger face. Black eye. Black eye.
You hear that song and say, man, maybe that guy's got a future playing more music. He's going to be around for a few years. And certainly he was. Jeff Tweedy back in his Uncle Tupelo days doing Black Eye. That's on that big collection, whatever it is, with the dates on it. March, whatever, Uncle Tupelo. Dash 80, whatever. I don't have it in front of me here. Just a big one, the anthology kind of thing. Check that out. Great stuff from Tupelo. Buddy Huffman could set me straight on some Uncle Tupelo. Remember Buddy Huffman, Macon Grayson? He's like a Tupelo guy, historian, aficionado. He knows all about it. I don't pretend to know as much as he does. I just know that one's called Black Eye, Jeff Tweedy, Tupelo. Love it. Hey, man, are you like me? Do you like Guy Clark? So much great stuff. Of course, we Texans love Guy Clark. And any other guy would do Old Number One. We could do Old Number One. We could do any Guy Clark album in the vault. This one comes from Dublin Blues, one of his other great records. We could certainly do all these. We could do the whole album on. I was just trying to get a little smorgasbord of stuff here for you in the vault. Shake it up a little bit. Oh, man, is there anything more gut-wrenching than this? The Randall Knife, the last song on Dublin Blues. This just popped out, you know, on the shuffle the other day. I just sat there and cried in front of my laptop. We'll leave you with this one. The Randall Knife from Guy Clark. Thanks for listening, folks. Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Join us next week where we will have more information to enlighten your life, sharing thoughts, visions, and all the news we have freely with you. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com, or call me 817-733-5256 to book the full band, or please come record at Trinidad World Recording Studio. We're just waiting up here in Fort Worth for you. That's all the time we have this week. Enjoy The Randall Knife by Guy Clark. We'll see you next week, folks. Much tougher.
My father had a Randall knife. My mother gave it to him. When he went off to World War II to save us all from ruin. Now, if you've ever held a Randall knife, you know my father well. If a better blade was ever made, it was probably forged in hell. My father was a good man. He was a lawyer by his trade. Only once did I ever see him misuse the blade. Well, it almost cut his thumb off when he took it for a tool. The knife was made for darker things. You could not bend the rules. Well, he let me take it camping once on a Boy Scout jamboree. I broke a half an inch off trying to stick it in a tree. Well, I hid it from him for a while, but the knife and he were one. And he put it in his bottom drawer without a hard word. There it slept, and there it stayed for 20-some-odd years. Sort of like Excalibur, except waiting for a tear. Died when I was 40, and I couldn't find a way to cry. Not because I didn't love him, not because he didn't try. Well, I'd cried for every lesser thing, for whiskey, pain, and beauty. But he deserved a better tear, and I was not quite ready. So we took his ashes out to sea and poured them off the stern. And then through the roses in the wake of everything we'd learned. And when we got back to the house, they asked me what I wanted. Not the law books, not the watch. I need the thing he's haunted. Oh, my hand burned for the Randall knife there in the bottom drawer. And I found a tear for my father's life and all that it stood for.